Father, thank you for bringing us here today. Thank you for this weather. This month has been incredible. Last month was even more incredible. I pray that you'll bless us today as we partake of not only each other's company, but the presence of you. In Jesus' name, amen. Oh, are we going to have some fun today? We are going to talk about longevity, the secret of the Fountain of Youth, as it's spelled out in part, in pieces, in fragments in the Bible. I first want to ask you a question, and I want you to raise your hand, okay? This was asked before, and I'll give you the stats in just a second, but if you had the ability to either live to be 80 years old, 120 years old, or 150 years old, how many of you would choose 80? How many of you would choose 120? And how many of you would choose 150 years? Interesting. The majority of the people that answered this questionnaire, what do you think they said? 80. And I think the reason is that, what do you think the reason is? Yeah, that it's not going to be a very good life beyond 80 years. It isn't going to be a very good 80, you know, beyond that. You know, the average life expectancy today, given whoever it is you're getting your stats from, but typically is men is at around 79 years old and women are 82 years of age. There's a myth out there that the life expectancy in the Roman era or even up until the 1800s was anywhere between 20 years old to 52 years old. They're absolutely correct and they're absolutely wrong. The myth is that you were old when you were 30 years old. That's not true. I'm 54 and I would look 54 years old if I was in the Roman era or in 1850 or 2015. I would look the same for the most part. The problem is that these statistics are skewed with infant mortality, wars, okay, diseases. The bubonic plague wiped out a lot of people, which really impacted the life expectancy during that time in the 1300s. The life expectancy since the time of David has been around, as the King James said, fourscore, but 70 to 80 years. That's about the life expectancy of humankind. However, what is the upper end of life expectancy here on planet Earth in this day and age? Well, anybody have any ideas? Upper end? 115? Yep. They say about 120. 120 is about it. And I will share with you someone who lived to be, well, I won't tell you just yet. Her name was Jean Calmette of France. She died in 1997. Okay, try to do the math here for a second. I'll give it to you in a second. She died in 1997. She was born in 1875. She lived to be 122 years of age. In 1888, at the age of 13, she met Van Gogh, Vincent Van Gogh, the artist. Vincent Van Gogh went into their store to purchase some paints and some canvas. And she'd seen him there apparently more than once, or he stayed there for quite a bit of time because she said that he was dirty, badly dressed, and disagreeable. Interestingly enough, this is one of the things we're not going to get into. One of the reasons why she died at the age of 122, her caretakers said that she died shortly after they announced to the world that she would not be making any more public appearances due to failing health. Some close to her believe that that's what killed her. So although we're not going to go into one of the characteristics of longevity is tending the garden, as we see in the Garden of Eden, God commanded us. I'm not going to go into that in any great deal. It is one of the secrets of longevity. So, and I remember it was interesting, years ago, I would say about 20 years ago in the newspaper, they were talking about baby boomers and how they had a little bit different idea about retirement. Their idea of retirement was they didn't want to retire. They didn't want to retire. So I'm going to inject this to you folks. Those who've retired, don't really retire. You know what I mean? Don't. Don't. Keep moving forward with something. Okay. What year did David approximately, do you know what year it was when David said that life expectancy was 70 to 80 years? About what time frame we're talking? About 1000 BC. So not a lot has changed in the last 3,000 years. But 1000 BC, we're going to go back a little bit further and just see exactly what life expectancy was like from the biblical perspective as we go back in time. Our next stop is to Moses. Moses lived right around 1450 to 1571 BC. So we're going back another 500 years from David's time. How old was Moses when he passed on? Do you remember? He was 120. However, what kind of 120-year-old was Moses? It says here in Deuteronomy 34:7, Moses was now 120 years old when he died. His eye was not dim, nor his natural force abated. Natural force abated. He was a strong and capable here and here at 120 years of age. Interestingly enough, there's a book I'm reading, and in a valley in Ecuador where the conditions are similar to the Hunzas over in the Himalayas, there was pictures of these men at 109 years old mounting horses and having a good-sized branch or log while they were walking down the road at 109, 106. I remember Charles Kuralt? Do you remember him? Remember him? Charles Kuralt at the time, back in the 70s, was overweight. He was 45 years older approximately, and he was interviewing a circus performer who was 106 years old. And when the circus performer said, "I gotta go do my running," what do you think Charles was doing while he was running next to him? The man was just jogging along, thin man, 106 years old, doing his daily exercise, and Kuralt was like, out of breath, couldn't keep up with them. So what's another characteristic of longevity? Exercise, keeping moving. Just as an aside, Moses' brother, Aaron, was 123 when he died. Joshua, his right-hand man, was 110. Interesting. So we go back to about 1500 BC and we see life expectancy, at least in these examples, at least we see in these three examples, that life expectancy was a little bit beyond 70 to 80 years. Let's go back to Abraham's dad, Amram. Amram was 138 years old when he died. Kohath, Moses' grandfather, was 133, and Levi, Moses' great-grandfather, was 137. Let's stop right there. Now we're seeing way beyond, well, not way beyond, but beyond 120. We're seeing a consistency of being in their 130s. Interesting. And from the book that I read on the Hunzas that Will lent me for a while, it's very interesting, they claim, and this is the Hunzas themselves, claim that most live to be 100, some 110, few 140 years of age. Interesting. Let's keep going back. Joseph was the son of Jacob, and he was 110 years old. Jacob, the son of Isaac, was 147 years old. And do you remember when Jacob came before the Pharaoh when he was 130 years old? He came before the Pharaoh, and the Pharaoh was remarking on his age. And this is what Jacob said. And this is, okay, let me give you a time frame. We're talking 1859 to 2000 BC. Okay, so we've gone back another 1,000 years from the time of David. And here's 130, 30-year-old Jacob talking to the Pharaoh, and in the Bible it says he said to the Pharaoh, and the Pharaoh said to Jacob, "How many are the days of the years of your life?" And Jacob said to Pharaoh, "The days of the years of my sojourning are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of my life, and have not, and they," meaning him, "have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their sojourning," meaning that you ain't seen nothing with me. The people before me lived even longer than this. He lived another 17 years, and he died at the age of 147. Isaac, now this was Jacob. He was the son of Isaac. Isaac, you remember who Isaac is, right? Isaac is the son of who? That's right. And Ishmael was his brother. Isaac was born, and this is, there are two lines in the Bible, by the way, genealogies in the Bible, and this is Isaac. Isaac was born in 1896 BC. He died in 1871 BC. Isaac was, do you remember how old he was? He was 180 years old. Ishmael was 137 years old. Abraham, born approximately 2,000 years BC, approximately. So we see right around that time frame, 2,000 BC. Now, when was the flood? Approximately. About 2,500 BC. We'll get there in just a second. But we see that from 1,000 BC to today, lifespan pretty much stayed the same, except for pockets of people that have living in very extraordinary circumstances. And then the people before 1,000 BC slowly inching up in the lifespan to approximately from 80 to 140 years of age over the course of 1,000 years. Okay, we're going to see something very dramatic in just a moment. 500 years span from that time of 2000 BC to the flood. That period of time is going to be very important as we progress here. Abraham was how old when he died? 175 years of age. By the way, do you know how old Sarah was? 127. Yeah. Abraham's father, now this is where it gets to be interesting. We're going back to a birth date of 2125 BC. We're getting closer. We're almost 375 years to the worldwide flood. Abraham's father, his name was Terah. Terah was 205 years old when he died. See, a lot of people, critics, look at the ages of the antediluvians, those who were born before the flood, and say, that can't be possible. 900 years is not possible. 900 years must mean 90 years, must mean 85 years, must mean 96 years, in the case of Methuselah. It couldn't possibly mean 900. But what we're seeing here is a progression of age as we get closer and closer back in time without anything wacky or weird taking place. You don't see an abruption of something weird or whatever. You know, you're seeing continuity here. And there's a reason why they dumb down in age, and we're going to talk about that. Terah's dad, or Abraham's grandfather, was Nahor, and he lived 230 years old before he died. Shurug, which was Abraham's Terah was 205. Terah's dad was Nahor. He only lived 148. Nahor's dad was Shurug. He lived 230. And then Shurug's dad was Reu, R-E-W, and he lived to be 239 years old. Reu's dad was Peleg, P-E-L-E-G. He lived 250 years to 200 years, approximately. He was born 200, 250 years before or after the flood. And he was 239 years old when he died. Now, this is where it becomes almost unbelievable. Peleg, his dad's name was Heber. And we're only talking about 3 or 4 generations before the flood. And Heber lived 464 years. Heber's dad was Selah. Selah, or Selah, lived 433 years. And Heber's dad, excuse me, Selah's dad was Aphrax. Aphrax was Shem's son, Shem being one of the sons of Noah. Shem, and then there was Aphrax. Aphrax lived 438 years before he died, and he was born 3 years after the flood. Now, how old? Now, that those are all people that were born after the worldwide flood. They ranged anywhere from 468 years down to David's time of 80 years. There's a progression. In the first generation, a couple of generations, everybody still maintained this 400-year lifespan, and then suddenly it went from 400 years and went down to 200 and some odd years, and that stayed for several generations. What happened? Why? Was there such a de-evolution, if you might want to call it, a digression, a deterioration in the human race? Let's talk about Shem. Shem is very interesting because other than Shem and his two other brothers and wives and Noah, they share one distinction, and that is they have one foot in the antediluvian world where the Garden of Eden was still there, being guarded by the angels with the flaming swords, and one foot into this busted up, almost unrecognizable earth that took place after the worldwide flood 4,500 years ago. Those eight have that distinction. What do they tell us about longevity? What do they have to share with us about how people are able to live that long? Well, interestingly enough, Shem, who was the father of Aphrax, or Aphraxad, who lived 438 years, Shem lived, how many years did Shem live? Do you guys know? Close. 650 years. He was born approximately 98 years or 100 years before the flood. So he helped his dad build the ark along with his other brothers. Okay, he was 100 years old when he entered into 98, 100 years old when he entered into the ark, went through that year-long journey of being inside the ark, and then lived another 550 years after the flood. He lived longer than any of these people that were born after the flood. He lived 550 years. And the connections, and I don't have the connections written down here, of who was able to talk to who is almost unbelievable. Who was in the same vicinity or the same time frame. And I'll give you one. I did write one down. Noah was born 2948 BC. He was, remember how old Noah was when he got on board the ark? He was 600 years old. That means he started the construction of the ark approximately at the age of 500. And he got on board at 600 years and then lived another 350 years after the flood. 2 years, 2 years he died before Abraham's birth. 2 years. Abraham's father could have sat down and had a bowl of soup with Noah. I get goosebumps, man. Let's talk about the people before the flood. I'll go through the patriarchs, the 10 patriarchs, and how old they were. First, we've got Noah, 950 years of age. Lamech, his dad, died at the age of 777 years old, prematurely. 5 years before the flood, he died. Could have been through misadventure or through a killing. We don't know. But he died at 777. Methuselah, the oldest man ever recorded at 969 years of age. That would be Noah's grandfather. And Methuselah spoke to who? Adam. So Noah could have sat down with his grandfather and said, "Grandfather, what was Adam and Eve like?" And he would have been able to explain to him what Adam spoke to him and the stories that he told him personally. Methuselah's dad was Enoch. Now, Enoch is a very odd individual in this whole hierarchy of patriarchs because Enoch only lasted 365 years. But there's a reason why he only lasted 365. Because when he was 365, he got snatched up into heaven. He was what they call translated. He never got a chance to live the full 900 and some odd years. God said, "You know what? You've walked with me for these 300 years. I like the quality. Let's take you right on up into heaven. Let's not even let you see death." And that's what happened to Enoch. Jared, Enoch's dad, was 962 years of age. Mahalalel was 895 years. Canaan was 910 years. Enos, 905 years. Am I going too fast, Kristen? I know, I should do this next time with a screen. I know. Enos, E-N-O-S, lived 905 years. Seth, 912 years. And Adam, 930 years. So taking Lamech and Enoch out of the equation, the average individual lived 900 plus years. Why? Whew, what a preamble to get to an hour sermon. There's some clues. Joshua and Caleb, all of Israel was promised what? That's right. And how did they characterize the land of Canaan? I haven't always wondered. Only recently have I wondered, why did they call that land specifically a land flowing with milk and honey? Why? To me, today, it looks like a desert. It looks like any other Middle Eastern country. It just looks like a desert. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean by back then that it was a desert. Okay, that's first off. Canaan may have been much more fertile than it is today. But still, land is land. What's up with that? Well, what kind of report came out of Canaan? What was going on in Canaan? They found giants. And I won't go into it right now, but when you go into the fossil record, you find lots of evidence of what? Giantism. Plants, animals, and people. People not so much in the fossil record, but occasionally you find some evidence that's been lost, unfortunately. But plants and animals, huge. And the fossil record typically is a encapsulation of what time period? Before the flood. So whatever the conditions were before the flood, those conditions in some respect may have been in Canaan because the people there were huge. But not just the people. Do you remember what else? So they went up, they went up out of the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rohab near the entrance of Hamath, and they went up through the south and came to Hebron. And then he names three of the descendants of Anak, who were the giants, okay? Then they came to the valley of Eshcol, and there they cut down a branch with one cluster of grapes. They carried it between the two of them on a pole. That land must have been extremely, and we'll get to this in just a second, the food and the soil of Canaan must have been like the soil of the pre-diluvian or the antediluvian world. That's my guess. Think about it for a second, folks. Perfect earth, not all fractured and beat up. God created the land. all the micronutrients, all the salt, all the elements in there in perfect order. Where did all the salt that was naturally in the ground go to after the flood? Into the ocean. Do you know when you don't have all the carcinogens and all the junk that we put into the ocean, do you know how much cancer is in the ocean typically of the fish and the animal life that's there? Zero. Why? Because they got all those micronutrients off the land that were supposed to go into the food to keep men and women happy and alive and forever. I mean, you know, there's more to it than that, obviously. I don't want to minimize the fact that God is the one that's keeping people, you know, alive forever. But at the same time, those who, after the fall, lived 900 years, there was a reason for it. My contention is it was part of it was the soil and the quality of the food that went into their tummies. Josephus. How many of you know who Josephus is? He's an ancient writer, wrote shortly after the death of Christ. And in his expose, his book, his writings, he says, listen to this. Now when Noah had lived 350 years after the flood, and all that time happily, he died, having lived a number of 950 years. Now, this is him writing this 2,000 years ago, and he's in agreement with the Bible. And he's putting in his own words, and he believes it. But let no one, upon comparing the lives of the ancients with our lives, with the few years which we now live, think that what we have said of them is false. Meaning that just because we live 70 to 80 years, don't take that away from them. They did live to be 900 years. Don't let what we see right now be to factor your opinion on what was taking place thousands of years before that, is what he's saying. And he says here that the reason for their longevity, at least in part, he says, and God made by God himself, and because their food for them was fitter for the prolongation of life. Their food was more fitter. Interesting. And he says that, and he goes on and he mentions at least six ancient historians that say the same thing. He doesn't quote them, but he quotes their names, being a man who was able to read their writings, which maybe some or all, and I haven't looked, are lost now. He says that they all agree that, and after he gets done with the last name, Nicholas, he says, relate that the ancients lived 1,000 years. So what did humans eat to sustain their 900 years before the flood? And the Lord God planted a garden eastward in Eden, and he put the man and the woman who he made there. For out of the ground made the Lord God to grow every tree pleasant to the sight and good for meat or for food. And then when Eve was questioned by Lucifer in the form of a snake, she said, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden. So that's what they ate. That's what they ate. They were, in essence, fruitarians, as we would call it today. And in their unfallen state, they could sustain and be sustained without any curse of the ground, without any curse themselves, without any taint of sin. Fruitarianism was perfectly designed for Adam and Eve. But after the fall, Adam and Eve became vegans. I don't want to say vegetarian because I just recently found out that vegetarian can include milk and eggs, and I thought that was veganism. They became vegans. Apparently, because of the sweat of the brow and how they had to work, they needed the extra nutrients, and as a result of that, veganism was then introduced as the ideal diet for humankind. We have one other story in the Bible where we see the effects of veganism, and that is Daniel. In Daniel 1:12, he says to him, no, we don't want the king's meat, we don't want the wine, we don't want the pork, we don't want the refined, whatever, we don't want it. Now, you got to understand something. I just read a book called The Starch Solution. I don't know if you have somebody have seen that book, but in The Starch Solution, I found something very, very intriguing. If not all, the Roman fighters of the Colosseum, You know what they ate to keep them strong? I mean, they fought to the death. This isn't just boxing. This is the real deal. And don't you think that if they had a secret that they discovered and they would circulate amongst themselves to try to give them every ounce of energy to be able to defeat their foe, they would know it. They would know it. And do you know what they ate? Their main staple was barley. Barley. I didn't connect all the dots until just recently. I didn't understand why the Egyptians, who were the mummies that were 2,000, 3,000 years old, why they had arthritis and they had heart disease and they had cancer. I didn't understand that, thinking that they didn't have Twinkies. They didn't have ho-hos and all this stuff that we have now, with all that stuff that we're hurting ourselves with in the United States, especially. Why in the world did these guys have all these diseases? You know what I found out? You know what they had? Royalty has what? Royalty also has privileges. Royalty also gets all the yummy tasting food that the slaves and the people fighting in the Colosseum, so to speak, don't get. They have to eat, guess what? Rice and potatoes and barley and vegetables. And as a result of that, they didn't have those diseases. The kings and the queens had those diseases. Interesting. And the reason why I didn't understand that is because in today's society, you don't have to be a king or a queen to be able to eat like they did. Everybody can if they want to. Anything that's just tastes good, we can get very inexpensively. But here's what's interesting. Just 10 days on a diet of water and vegetables, these kids, as it says, at the end of the 10 days, their appearance seemed better and they were fatter than the other youths who had been eating the king's choice food. And then a little later on in verse 20, it says, as for every matter, after years of being on this diet, and this is all, they knew this diet. They came from home eating like this. And they brought this mindset to the king's court and said, please, let us continue to eat like this. Trust us, we know what we're doing. And they did. Years later, after they went through their indoctrination and after they went through all that they had to learn in order to be ready to go before the king and be of use to him, once they presented themselves to the king, here's what the king had to say about them. Now understand, they had peers that were eating the king's food all around them. They were an oddity in their diet, all right? Everybody else was learning the same things that Daniel was learning, and here's what the king had to say about it after years of this kind of involvement in their diet. As for every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king consulted them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and conjurers who were with them in all his realm. Interesting. Let's talk about another factor of longevity. In the Bible, it says in Genesis 1:6, and God said, and I think, Don, you talked about that briefly, about the firmament. Firmament is just atmosphere or sky. It says here that let the firmament be in the midst of the waters. Apparently on planet Earth, there was a lot of water. And on the, which day was it, Don? The second day? Second day when he did the firmament? I think it was. He divided the waters from the waters. Huh? How do you divide the waters from the waters? This is what he did. He took some of the water and he created oceans out of it. Seas, as they call it in the Bible. The other half, let's just call it half, he put up in the atmosphere. Now, is that firmament there today? No, not like it was before the flood. Now, there's two theories as far as how that water presented itself, so to speak, up there. One, that it was just a vapor canopy. The other is that it's compressed and it was frozen, actually. It was a frozen canopy up there that, because of everything that God did, it just held itself in check. I don't know which it is, but the point is that there was something up there doing what to the sun? It was filtering the sun. Do you know the sun has a lot of different rays out there, and there's other rays too that are bombarding the earth. Do you know what some of them are? X-ray, gamma ray, cosmic ray, infrared, ultraviolet, and there's ultraviolet A, B, and C, okay? The natural light in between all that. Is all of those rays healthy? Gabe, I know you know something about that. X-rays, would you like to be X-rayed every single day? No, because X-rays are not healthy, necessarily. We give them in small doses, do we not? And we don't do it every day. X-rays aren't all that good for you, and cosmic rays aren't all that good for you. And guess what? Infrared is very, very hot. What do we use to protect our eyes? Sunglasses. Sunglasses. Did Adam and Eve have to wear sunglasses before the flood? Before that canopy came down, do you think there was a need for sunglasses? I'm thinking maybe not. Why do we wear sunglasses? In part, it's just so that we can see better, you know what I mean? So we're not, but the sun is hitting us directly these days. It didn't before. What is one of the causes of cataract? It's one of the UV rays. I don't know if you knew that or not. What causes wrinkles? Sunlight. Interesting. Their light was diffused, so only the good rays got through, and all the bad rays were deflected back out into space. I'm not going to make this a three-hour sermon. Let me just continue on. Oxygen levels and the pressure, the barometric pressure in that canopy, under that canopy, the surface of the earth canopy, in that environment that we lived in. They have taken bubbles out of amber, and amber is fossilized tree sap. Evolutionists say it's 65 million years old. We say it's right around the time of the worldwide flood. Air samples from the world just before the worldwide flood got trapped into amber. And evolutionists, not creationists, have crushed those pieces of amber and sucked out the atmosphere inside those bubbles to see what the atmosphere was like. 65 million years ago, put us before the flood, they've done us a favor. This is what they found out. The oxygen levels today are 21%. The oxygen levels of before the flood was 25 to 30%. That 25 to 30% gave the ability of a brontosaurus with a neck that was 30 feet long to be able, through these two little slits in their head, to be able to actually breathe oxygen in and get to its small lungs. That's one of the reasons why you don't see a 90-foot brontosaurus anymore. They would not be able to, under the current conditions of our atmosphere, to be able to even live. Bugs were twice as big or more, 10 times big. That's the reason why dragonflies, some of them had wingspans of 36 inches. Because of the increased oxygen, the lack of UVB rays or the harmful UV rays, and we'll talk about the barometric pressure. Today, at sea level, the pressure of everything that comes in on us at sea level is 14.7 pounds per square inch. You go underwater, it starts to press on you. You go up in the air, oxygen doesn't get less. It's the pressure that gets less. So you go up, 10, 15,000, I don't know what the stat is, but your pressure reduces, you're having a harder time breathing because the concentration of oxygen is less because of the pressure. There's still 21% oxygen there. It's just that the pressure. I remember in Buffalo in 1968, there was a guy, he'd come over to our house, he lived across the street, he was a doctor. He had tattoos. I'd never seen tattoos before. He was in the Vietnam War. And every weekend, he would go and spend time with other Vietnam people that came back, our soldiers that came back from Vietnam, with gangrene. And he would go into this chamber with them and spend the weekend in there with them. And I didn't know what he was doing at the time, but he was using hyperbaric pressure and oxygen to heal their gangrene. Folks, they are using antediluvian pre-flood ecology and reproducing it and doing amazing things to heal people. Normally, when we think about these pressurized tubes or chambers, we think about people that have been underwater and come up too quickly. They get the bends and they put them through a treatment, and then they make people feel better. Now they're finding that these oxygen and hyperbaric treatment centers are able to do even more. Did you know that when you get a stroke, that there are dead brain cells at that point and they're no longer can be revived? But what I didn't know is that there are brain cells that are sleeping, that are not working. And when you take 100% oxygen under 2 times the atmospheric pressure, and you give them an application for 45 minutes, because that's about all you can take without overdoing it, and give them a number of those, usually 40, they do 40 treatments, those latent cells will become alive again and they'll actually start working, and people who've had strokes can actually begin moving parts of their body that they hadn't moved before. We're talking pre-flood technology? I don't even want to call it technology. Science. Science. It's exciting stuff. Now can you get a kind of a glimpse of maybe why these people lived to be 900 years? One other thing too. Oh, by the way, and they found that the barometric pressure before the flood was about 2 times what it is today. The electromagnetic field, you know, that field that we see the aurora borealis up there in the northern lights. Okay, that's the sun's solar wind coming down and reflecting off of it. Everything else, it gets pressed away, but up there it bounces and absorbs in a way that it creates these lights. Did you know if we didn't have that electromagnetic field around our Earth, our atmosphere would blow away and we'd all be dead? Interestingly enough, the electromagnetic field, and they're able to it's got a half-life of 1,400 years. Evolutionists will tell you that it's getting ready to flip. So South Pole will be North Pole, North Pole will be South Pole. And it's done that for millions of years. Every once in a while, every 800,000 years, it flips. The creationist says, no, we were given so much electromagnetic force, and it's been abating, abating, abating for the last 6,000 years, or at least the last, 6,000 years. It was 8 to 10 times greater before the flood. From a creationist standpoint, if we live another 8 to 10,000 years, within 6 to 8,000 years, our electromagnetic field will be so little, if not almost non-existent, that our atmosphere will go away. A couple more things and then we'll end. Dr. Kiyomori in Japan. In Japan, I don't know if you know this, but sunlight is very, very important to them. Their flag was the flag, the rising sun. The sun is very important. Matter of fact, you can get taxed if your building is blocking the sun on somebody else's place. That's right. That's how important it is to them in such a small, congested area. You know, they have to go up and it's, you know. Dr. Kiyomori wanted to grow a plant down in his basement. He had room down there. He apparently didn't have room, whatever. So he planted a plant down in the basement, and he thought to himself, you know, let's see if we can't take some light from outside on the roof and get a collector of some sort, and we'll send it down through fiber optic cable, and we'll put it on the plant so the plant in my basement can have natural light. He did it, and the plant started to respond unlike anything that he'd ever seen or even thought. And what was happening was that the plant was getting all the good sun rays and all the bad sun rays, the infrared and the UVA rays were completely eliminated, and this plant started to grow. Well, he created this collector to do this so you can light your house with fiber optic cables from the sun with the best of lighting. And here's what happened. He took this and brought it to the 1985 Expo in Japan. And this is what this gentleman said. I watched enthusiastic workmen erect the first himawari, which is a Japanese word for sunflower, designed by Kiyomori during a later trip to Japan. I saw it work. The himawari made one ordinary, not genetically altered, tomato seed turn into a tree 30 feet high and 60 feet across and produce 15,000 tomatoes during a 6-month period. This giant tomato plant was inside, in the shade. One last thing. Are there people doing experiments with this concept that I'm sharing with you that's from the Bible? And the answer is yes. Dr. Carl Baugh of the Creation Evidence Museum in Dallas, Texas, has been ahead of the curve here. He's been experimenting with hyperbaric chambers and oxygen and CO2 and electromagnetic fields. And he's trying to recreate the pre-flood world artificially. Here's some examples of what they've been able to come up with. or what the results were from some of their experiments. They extended the lifespan of a fruit fly 3 generations. The molecular change of venom in the copperhead snake to a non-toxic state. Accelerated growth of piranha fish from 2 to 16 inches over a period of 2.5 years, and I understand they're vegetarians now. In conclusion, humans were created, did not evolve, by design, by a loving, intelligent God 6,000 years ago. Our ancient ancestors were to live forever in bliss in paradise. That's the original plan. Where finding your food and your lodging would be easy. Easy. After the fall, shortly after the fall, man lived, Noah, 900 years. Due to severe ecological and environmental change, humans can no longer live disease-free for centuries like our ancient ancestors. Eternity is in the future, soon. And we wait for our change. But until then, is there anything more that we can do with this information? Thank you for loving us, Lord. Thank you for creating everything. And we look forward to our change, and we look forward to everything that we can do in our human, with the possibilities that we have to be able to live a very productive and healthy life. Thank you for Jesus. Thank you for the examples in the Bible, and thank you for the Bible itself. Help us to treasure it. In Jesus' name, amen.